Steinfeld and most girls.
Good evening, you're tuned to Ireland's only pop-up radio station, Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services in Dublin 8. Eric Lawler and Dave O'Sullivan with you through until 7 o'clock this evening.
Yes, now coming up this hour, we have a hugely positive impact on the people we encounter every day in our lives by doing one relatively simple thing. Listening. Susan Clark is on the way shortly.
Then later, 2FM DJ and author Louise McSherry joins us to talk about bodies, big, small, short, tall. They're all incredible and do so much for us, so it's important to celebrate them. Louise is on the way around 6:30. But first, a song.
Nevada and Fetty Wap with the Mac. This is Walk In My Shoes Radio, encouraging you to get the conversation even started this Mental Health Week. Now, joining us in studio is former social worker and counsellor, but current journalist, Susan Clark. You're very welcome to the show, Susan.
Thanks a million, guys. Really nice to be here.
We're absolutely thrilled to have you, Susan. And we were just saying before you came in, this Susan person better have some gifts for us, because we just got books of Fiend. And you delivered with
thank
jellies.
Goodness. So, thank goodness.
You are the queen in our eyes.
More good mood food.
Not so much healthy stuff like a lot of the chats have been having on. But, you know.
We can all have a little cheat every now
exactly,
and then.
Exactly. Nice
you know,
treat.
With food.
Yeah. And well done for buying them before the sugar tax kicked in. Fair play to you.
Absolutely.
So, come on.
So, we were talking just about different kinds of ways you can communicate with people and people that may have some kind of mental health issues and stuff. And we're just talking about, during the break, was listening. And we just want to know, what is the kind of difference between regular listening and active listening?
Yeah, like, I think, obviously, that's really important because people might think, oh, we're doing a bit, you know, piece on listening. I do that every day. I'm grand on that. But actually, what most people do is they just passively hear. So, you know, you'll say to Dave, oh, what are you up to tomorrow? He'll start and you'll be thinking of what you have to do with the kids tonight, where you have to go tomorrow, and you're switched off already.
Zoning out, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And vice versa. Happens us all. So when we're actively listening, what we're really doing is we're really engaging with somebody and we're opening up to connection. And when anybody is reaching out to us for support, when they're in difficulty, really what they're looking for is connection. Mm-hmm. And so active listening is so important for that reason. And I'll give you an example, like through my career, of when I really realized the difference between listening and actively listening and the power of that. So I was a medical social worker in the Children's Hospital in Crumlin, and my team was the neurology team. So working predominantly with babies and families where babies had all kinds of different brain disorders. And like, we know so little about the brain, you know, research is happening all the time, but most of the time the doctors didn't even have a name for the types of disorders that the babies had, you know. Yeah. So they weren't really able to tell parents, like, your baby, will it walk, will it talk, will it go to regular school? So for me, my job was to support people. But when people don't know what they're facing, it's really difficult to know how to help them. Mm. So a lot of the times I felt really powerless. I thought, how can I help these families in really difficult situations? But what happened for me one day was I was working with a family. They had this absolutely beautiful 8-month-old baby girl. And she had just gone, like, her condition had just taken a really difficult kind of a way, you know, that the doctors hadn't predicted. You know, everybody was kind of thrown off guard, and it was very touch and go. And Dad was on the ward with the baby, and I went up and I thought, what can I say?
Hugely stressful time for them, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, really, really difficult. And of course, the thing is, what can you say? You can't say anything. So I just thought, I'm just going to stay here. I'm just going to be with this man here. And I just sat down, and he just opened up. I probably asked a couple of questions, you know, just kind of opened it up. And of course, at times like that, what people do is they reflect on their whole life, you know. So he was telling me about how himself and his wife met, the plans they had for their baby, everything, the music he liked, you know. He told me he played the drums, all these different things came up, faith, everything. And I just listened. And we'll talk about it later, but probably asked him certain key phrases, maybe to let him know it was okay for me that he was saying all this, that I was really there, I was really listening. And the connection for me with that family has stayed with me. And that's, you know, years ago.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about actively listening.
So Susan, when you're saying that you're actively listening, and how do you reinforce that with the person you're listening to? Are you repeating some of the stuff they've said to show them that you've been listening? Or do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, listening, you could be listening and not really listening, if you know what I'm saying. Like, there's something else. But you're saying that you were actively listening. You were sat with this man. You did give him a few key questions and phrases. But I suppose, how did you reassure him that you're actively listening? What the little techniques you were using?
So this is the really important thing, and it's a really important thing to know, is active listening is a skill. So the same as driving is a skill, it takes practice. So we're going to really break it down here during this piece, so it can sound like there's a lot, you know, involved in it for people, but really when you practice it, it will come very naturally and people will find their own way with it. So exactly the same as learning to drive a car, people will be thinking of, it's all so weird, clutch, gear, brakes, you know, all the rest of it, mirrors, and it takes a while. But with practice, it becomes very easy and everybody finds their own way. So we'd really say to people, like, what we're talking about is not difficult. Anybody can do it. And it's really just about practicing. So
that's actually what I was going to ask you that next. Is it just a thing that is for professional therapists and counsellors, or is it a thing that everybody can do?
Yeah, absolutely anybody. And I'll give you an example. Like last week, I was in the office, we're in an open plan office, and pile of work, you know, stacked up beside me, and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, here go, how can I prioritise any of this? And I looked around, the colleague who sits beside me was obviously not herself, you know, just really, you know, I knew by her, like something's going on. And I'm there looking at the pile of work on this side and, you know, my friend, my colleague on the other side. And I thought, if I ask her how she is, I'm going to get into something here. And honestly, like, that's the choice, you know, they have to make. And some days I may not have been able to do this. That's being honest. And everybody has those days, you know. But I just turned to her and I asked her, you know, how's it going? And of course her first answer was, I'm grand. Absolutely, yeah. So we say to people, if we're asking somebody, if we're saying to somebody how they are, we really need to let them know that we really want to know, you know. So I asked her a couple of times, a couple of different ways, how's the family, how's work going, you know, whatever. And by the third probably question, she really started to open up and she had an awful lot going on. And we talked for about, I'd say 45, 50 minutes. And she came to me later that day and she said to me, you know, she said, after that chat, I think I can, I think that'll do me for the next 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really what we're talking about. And so it's something so simple as listening. It can sound simple, but actually it's not easy. And so that's why it takes practice, but it has huge impact. And the reward for me was I didn't care about the pile of work beside me. I realized the most important thing is the person sitting beside me.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And then
yeah.
what's there's one thing in listening to somebody as taking in what they're saying and everything. Mm. For the other person speaking, what is the value of them actually being heard?
Well, this is the thing. Like, all through my career, I have heard change begins when someone feels heard. And that is absolutely the beginning sometimes of somebody changing their life, somebody getting help, somebody engaging in services. Because we all know what it feels like not to be heard when we reach out to somebody and we think, they didn't listen to me at all. Mm-hmm. And that can really put people off from getting help. And yet, what we have this really... you know, simple but not easy tool that we can use in our everyday lives that can have such a huge impact on people.
What was I going to say? We're going to take a quick listen to a track now, Susan, but you're going to stay with us and share some practical tips people can apply to be active listeners next.
Sure.
To be cautious, people tell me not to lose my self-control. People tell me to be flawless. People tell me not to let myself evolve.
was Stronger by Clean Bandit. We are still here with the fascinating Susan Clark, the former social worker and counsellor and current journalist. And Susan, before the break, we were talking before about the importance of active listening. But can you share some practical tips with us, Susan, for how we might actively listen in a particular situation?
Yeah. And one of the things we were saying earlier is we really want the person to know that we are really with them, that we are engaged with them. So active listening really is listening with all our senses. So where it's appropriate, we make eye contact. We might face the person. So we'll, you know, turn whatever way we need to face. Now, for different people, there's different ways of listening. So one of the things traditionally that I would have learned was, and the Men's Shed organization says this about their group of men, that men tend to share and listen in activity. So like playing a game of golf, exercising. So
it may not be
appropriate for men to kind of sit opposite each other. Women tend to, generalization, would tend to share face to face. So, but for everybody, it's different. So where appropriate, you're just letting people know that you're there, making eye contact, facing them. And what you're really doing is trying to encourage them to keep going. So what will happen for the person who's listening is judgments will come into their head. Oh, I wouldn't have said that. I would have said that. They're starting to talk to me about something I feel a bit uncomfortable with. Because one of the things we were saying on the break was, you know, we probably, so many people actively listen all the time without realizing it. So they'll hear something on the radio or they'll meet somebody on the train, on the bus, and they'll go, oh my God, fascinating person. The journey flew. I was listening the whole time. That was probably active listening. They were fully engaged with that person or whatever they were listening to. But when somebody reaches out to us for support, we can panic and think, I should be doing something. What can I do? So this person is opening up to us. We're sitting there thinking, oh my God, what do I do? What do I do?
I think I would agree with that, Susan. I think there's been one or two, I suppose, when I look back in my life, there's been one or two situations like that where I felt panic. I haven't got the necessary skills to deal with this. I'll get them a phone number.
Yeah.
That will be my...
So that's what we really want people to know is that's where you click into your active listening. That's why it's important to practice it as much as possible. And for them to know with confidence that listening is enough. It is more than enough. So you stay with that person. So you come back to, you let all the thoughts, because they will come into your head and they'll come into your head throughout whatever the person is saying. Let them come in, let them go again. Stay focused on the person. And some, you know, and if you miss something that somebody has said, don't panic. Say, you can say things like, I think you said that it was really difficult at this time in your life. Do I have that right? Do you want to say more about that?
Right.
So you're letting them know that you're okay with what they're saying, that you want to know more, and that you're still with them. And phrases like that, as you do this, will get easier for you and will become more natural.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, because like we said already, like sometimes people will come to us for support when it's not a convenient time for us. So again, that will be something that will throw people. Those things will come into their mind about, oh my God, I really should be doing X, Y, and Z, but now, and I really want to be there for this person. I really want to know what to say. That's where you stay with the person. Stay in the connection, stay listening. Let them know. And even things like I would have said to people, you know, you're never on your own. You're not alone. That sometimes is enough to let people keep going and to let them know this is the connection that they needed, you know? So.
And Susan, just in a situation where you mentioned there, somebody's come to me to talk, wants me to listen, I suppose. Mm. And if you are genuinely in a situation where you don't have the time, or is there a technique there where you say, listen, I promise I'll get back to you, or what do you do there?
Do you know, that happened to me just today. I got a phone call from somebody and I was in the middle, I had a meeting lined up, and they said to me, can you meet for a coffee? Like, you know, I really need to talk. And I had to say, I can't right now. What I did say was, can I call you back? I'll call you back after the meeting. Will you be available then?
Right.
And we were able to arrange to meet. So that's a really good point, is don't panic if you can't right then. But there's lots of things that you can do. That's one of them. Arrange another call with them and then arrange another meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, it's very simple, but it's that thing of don't panic. Let them know you want to see them. Let them know you can't right now, but you are available whenever. And again, that is connecting still with that person. You're not putting them on the long finger. You're making an arrangement, but it's just not for right then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so just while you're actively listening to a friend, like while they share whatever it is that they're going through, how can you apply, is there some kind of techniques and just things that for when you meet with them What can you do physically to let them know? Again, I think we touched on it a bit earlier, but just things that you need to be aware of now, rather than what you can do, what shouldn't you do? What's the kind of...
It shouldn't be on your phone,
stops.
Anyway.
Well,
You
say that like I'm on my phone now.
Oh, yeah, I'll be with you in a second. I'm on level 16 here on Angry Birds. I'll be back in a second, right? Yeah.
Angry Birds?
Yeah, you had a terrible time here. Yeah, no worries. I'll be back in a second.
Yeah, I'm expecting to see in the Fair City storylines now Deco having some
Deco
active
and Cole
listening.
Trying to listen to each other.
Deco and Cole actually have a lot of active listening coming up at each other.
Yes, there is, yes.
Stay tuned, folks.
So, sorry, we're going off topic there.
No, you're absolutely right, because there will be a lot going on for the person who's listening. And so being aware of what's happening for you physically is very important. So things like what Eric had said earlier about that little panic starting of, oh my God, what do I do? So starting to feel tightness in your chest, maybe starting to feel butterflies in your tummy. Oh my God, what are they going to say? Little bit of like almost cold sweat or sweats, or however that anxiety usually shows up in people, that's maybe what would be happening. So I'd say to people, if possible, put 2 feet on the ground. Make sure you're aware. Just bring into your own awareness what's happening in your own body, in your own self. You're still actively engaged with the person who's talking. You're still listening. But all you're doing is being aware that all of this is happening for you as well. And that's, again, why this is a practice. So people think listening, oh, grand. Actually, there's so much going on for us when we do. And that's why it's so important. Like I said, I think I said this earlier, like listening can sound so simple, but it's not necessarily easy. So when we really want to be able to be there for each other, this is really how we can do it, to really make sure that we're connecting with people, especially when they're in difficulty.
Open ears are as important as open arms.
Yeah, absolutely.
Susan, thank you so much for coming into us.
Just a new hashtag there, well, Dave.
Come here, look, I'm not just a pretty face, you know. But come here, all of that has been such useful advice. I know I'm certainly going to try apply some of it next time. I need to lend an ear to somebody.
Yeah.
But, okay. So, Susan, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
It's
been fascinating, Susan.
Thank you so much. Fascinating guest. I think we got the good batch today.
We did indeed. We've got the best guests all day long on Welcome My Shoes FM. We've had Susan Clark. We've had Fiona Coulon. And next up, we have Louise McSharry from 2FM, and she's going to talk to us about stuff.
Then this life was gonna be for me. I love you gave me to discover was right here. But now I'm caught up in a dream, don't wanna leave. See, I ain't been one for wishing, not at all. When you least expect, it's creeping up on you. No confiding nor abiding to no rules. And now I'm content knowing that I'm here with you. It's creeping up on you. No confiding nor abiding to no rules. And now I'm content knowing that I'm here with you.
now. That was Jess Glynn and Right Here. Now, up now we have Louise McSherry, the broadcaster and author of Fat Chance, My Life in Ups, Downs and Crisp Sandwiches. Hello, Louise.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
We are very good. Now, we want you to know, first of all, we've just learned that from Susan, we are now actively listening to you.
Yes.
Fully engaged.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And I know how to make something in the garden that'll ease your wrinkles if you've got any.
Well, Eric.
That's all. Sorry, Louise. This is Eric Lawler here with David Sullivan. And we're having a fantastic... Louise, we're disappointed you're not here in person, but we're very, very happy that you're on the line. But you see, it's difficult for you to... like the last two guests brought us in gifts.
Yeah.
It's difficult for you to bring us a gift because you're on the line.
It is. So we're I have my own show to do. That's why I'm
course.
Already
a proper broadcaster.
I'm already in work.
Well,
yeah,
not two charlatans like us.
Yeah, but do you know what? We're chancers. We take it. Yeah. But do you know what, Louise? I tell you what, we will accept the gift of knowledge and insightfulness if you want to send that along the lines.
I will do my very best.
They're all going mad. They didn't think about it like that. I'm looking at them all in here. Louise, your book that was published last year is essentially a memoir. But talking about your experience of being body shamed in it, you really kind of seem to open up the topic for discussion in Ireland. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, so the book isn't, I mean, there's one bit of the book that's about that, but that wasn't really the whole point of the book. But it kind of ended up being what I talked about most when I was doing kind of interviews and stuff around the book. You know, I call myself a fat person. I am a fat person. I've been fat, I actually don't think I have been fat my whole life, but I felt like I was fat my whole life. Because I was put on a diet when I was about 6. So that was kind of the first time that I knew that there was something wrong with my body in based on other people's standards. And basically what I said in the book is that I don't think it's okay that, you know, fat people are told that they should be miserable for their entire lives and kind of live with this idea that there's a thin person inside them waiting to break out. You know, it's my opinion that, you know, it's actually okay to be happy if you're fat, and we shouldn't be punishing people because they're fat. Like,
absolutely.
You know, I think we have a really messed up idea of how we value people based on their appearance. You know, in a lot of cases, we view fatness as like a symptom of laziness or sloppiness or messiness, and just not true and really unfair.
And that's a train of thought created by, I suppose, the media, isn't it? Really, when you know, newspapers, magazines, films, they're told, to an extent we're told, you know, this is the way you should be. I know people are starting to take a turn towards that, you know, you don't have to be skinny to be on the front of a magazine these days, but I think overall the media have created this image to men and women that this is the way you should look.
Well, that's part of it, but like if you go back hundreds of years in history, there have always been, you know, there's always been an ideal body type.
Yeah.
You know,
Adonis.
Hundreds of years ago, it was my body type was the ideal body type, you know,
yeah.
The Rubenesque body. If I was living in that time, I would be a model. I'd be painted by artists all over the world. But unfortunately, my body is not in fashion at the moment. And that is literally what we're talking about is fashion. And, you know, these days, because we are so knowledgeable in terms of science and medicine and blah, 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 people can kind of hide their prejudice behind pretend concerns. They pretend that, you know, it's really that they're worried about your health and, you know, it's just not healthy to be fat. But, you know, even a lot of the things that we believe about fat bodies have been disproved, and, you know, BMI has been shown to be not an accurate way of gauging how healthy someone is. You can be a very large person or a reasonably large person and still be very healthy as long as you're active and as long as you eat well. You know, and you can be a very thin person and be extremely unhealthy because you don't eat well and you're not active.
Yeah.
So the idea that you can kind of gauge how healthy someone is from their outside appearance is just wrong. And, you know, the sooner that people realize that, the better, I think.
Yeah. And Louise, and for people who might think name calling is, you know, just part of life, particularly growing up at school, or, you know, it goes on, get over it, is the mantra there, I suppose. What do you say to those people about the long-term damage commenting on someone's weight can have?
Well, not just weight, but name calling in general can be really damaging. You know, commenting on the problem is people sometimes think that if you shame someone for their weight, that shame will be an impetus for them to lose weight. But actually, studies have shown that it has the opposite effect, that shame is not a useful tool in getting someone to lose weight. It actually ends up with people gaining weight. And, you know, most fat people will always be fat. I think about 5% of people who go on diets or make an effort to lose weight, lose enough weight, and then keep it off. Like, more than 1 to 5 years.
Yeah.
So 95% of people, no matter how hard you try, you're going to stay kind of roughly around where you are. So it's better if we just kind of accept ourselves as we are. And you know, if we don't do that, and if we listen to the things that people tell us, then, you know, our self-worth will be on the floor, and that can result in really unhealthy habits. It can result in more weight gain. It's just dangerous all around.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, we can all have different kind of relationships with our bodies and at different times in our lives. And I know, currently, I know I'm not happy with mine, and that's why I'm looking to do something.
I'm not happy with yours either. I'm only joking.
I know even you were saying before we come on air that you just joined a gym.
I did, yes.
Because you've seen recent holiday photos. And you went,
yes.
But you weren't happy. And you weren't happy, so your first thing was to go and do something about it. And 2 days after coming off a holiday, you...
I was on the treadmill, yeah. And look at me now.
Look at you now.
Slightly better.
Louise, what advice would you give to people who are struggling to embrace and to kind of celebrate their bodies?
Well, it's really hard. And I think that there's nothing wrong, if you don't feel comfortable with yourself, there's nothing wrong with, you know, deciding to live a healthier lifestyle. I mean, obviously, I don't have any objections to that. But, you know, make sure that your feelings are your feelings and not feelings that are projected onto you by other people or by media. So take a look at what kind of media you're digesting. Take a look at what Instagram accounts you follow. Take a look at what Twitter accounts you follow. Take a look at what magazines you read. What messages are they sending you? If they're sending you the message that if you're not thin, you're not good, then, you know, how can you know that your thoughts about yourself are actually your own thoughts and that they're not just projections from other people? I would say it's really helpful to look at people who are beautiful, who are well-dressed, and who look great, who are your size. So, you know, if you're a bigger person, find a bigger person who's really stylish and good-looking, because it can help you understand that you can be very stylish and good-looking at your size. You know, if you only ever look at thin people, your own body is going to look jarring. So the more comfortable you get with images of people like you, the more comfortable you'll be with yourself.
Wow.
Brilliant, okay. Brilliant advice there. Louise, can you stay with us for a little while? We're just going to take a quick song and then we're going to continue this chat some more.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's cool.
Thank you. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, nah, nah, yeah. I am not your homie, not your homie. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, nah, nah, yeah. You don't know me. What you gonna do? Yeah. Is money, so don't f*** with mine. See, I'm out with my girls, I'ma have a good time. Step back with your chit-chat, killing my vibe. See, you can't get too much of a good thing. Swarm here dressed up in the finest things. Well, please hold your tongue, don't say a damn thing. On camera flashing, please step back, it's my style, you're cramping. You here for long, oh no, I'm just passing. Do you wanna drink? Nah, thanks for asking. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, nah, nah, yeah. I am not your homie, not your homie. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, nah, nah, yeah. You don't know me. We can throw shapes together, but it doesn't mean you're in my circle. Yeah. Cruise through life and I'm feeling on track. If you can't keep up, then you better fall back. 'Cause money look better when I see it all stacked up. Camera flashing, please step back, it's my style, you're cramping. You here for long, oh no, I'm just passing. Do you wanna drink? Nah, thanks for asking. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, nah, nah, yeah. I am not your homie, not your homie. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, nah, nah, yeah. You don't know me.
flashing. Please step back, it's my style, you're cramping. You here for long, go no, I'm just passing. Do you wanna drink? Nah, thanks for asking. Ooh, nah, nah, yeah. Don't act like you know me, like you know me. Nah, nah, yeah. I am not your homie.
That was Jax Jones featuring Ray and You Don't Know Me. Now, let's get back to Louise McSherry. She is a broadcaster and author of Fat Chance, My Life in Ups, Downs and Crisp Sandwiches. Louise, you're back with us.
I am. I'm still here. Still alive.
You haven't left us. Thanks very much for hanging on there, Louise.
You've been on the line chatting about fat shaming, embracing your bodies and generally being that bit kinder to one another. And I just wanted to ask you, Louise, you had a cancer diagnosis a couple of years back and you made a documentary about your time going through treatment for the disease. Now, we often hear of people that are feeling that their body has let them down after cancer diagnosis. How did your relationship with your body change during that time?
Oh, I felt the exact opposite. You know, the cancer that I got with Hodgkin's lymphoma, it was completely random. I didn't get it because of anything I did or didn't do. They think that sometimes people get it because you get a virus that mutates and it just kicks off cancer. So I didn't feel in any way kind of blamey about it. I didn't feel like it was my own fault. I didn't feel any of that stuff. But what I did feel was just immense gratitude to my body, because I was really, really sick by the time I was diagnosed. I'd been sick for more than a year, they think, possibly a couple of years. And I was still working full time. Wow. I mean, I didn't feel great, but I was still going.
Yeah.
So I just felt like, gosh, that's amazing that my body under all that pressure was able to keep going. And then I had a really, like really straightforward experience with chemo, and much easier than a lot of people have it. And again, I just felt like my body is playing an absolute blinder. And it was the first time really that I appreciated what my body did rather than what it looked like, or, you know, how clothes fit it. It was the first time I kind of really properly acknowledged all that our bodies do for us every day, just in keeping us going, you know?
It's amazing. And do you think, by the fact, Louise, that you were still working, do you think that helped in any way? You know, that
for
you're
the cancer.
Yeah, just, you know, just your state of mind, I suppose. Just the fact that.
Well, I didn't know I had it.
Right.
Okay. I didn't know what I had.
Oh, like, sorry. Right.
I thought you knew. Yeah. You were diagnosed.
Oh, and you just continued to work for 2 years. Okay. It's like, wow, that's some woman there, right there.
No,
people ringing in sick with a cold. You know what I mean?
No. I was sick for a couple of years, and I didn't know. I knew I was sick, but I didn't know what was wrong with me.
Ah, right.
Wow.
I was going to the doctor and stuff, and by the end, I was having blood tests every week, and I was seeing a consultant every week in the matter. But you know, I knew that there was something wrong, but I didn't think it was anything serious. So I didn't take it seriously enough to kind of take time off work. I don't know. In my house, we didn't take time off work or school. Like, you know, you had to be basically incapable of standing up if you were going to not go to school or work. So, you know, it wasn't really an option for me.
Did it affect your work? Like, not knowing that you have, did you actually affect the work that you were doing? Did you feel any different while you were in work from before you had it?
I actually don't think it did affect my work. I think it affected everything else. I think, like, definitely my social life, like, I wasn't able to kind of, I could go out, but I couldn't stay out for long. This is before I knew what was wrong with me. Like,
yeah.
I couldn't really do much outside of work, to be honest, but I'm really kind of career driven. So I guess I didn't let that suffer. Like, actually at the time, when I was diagnosed, I was in the middle of 2 weeks of covering for Ryan Tuberty, who was doing the mid-morning show on 2FM at the time.
Oh, wow.
So things were going pretty well.
No pressure there, Louise.
Yeah.
Up until that point. I don't think my work did suffer, actually.
Obviously it didn't. And Louise, you recently, just recently bleached your hair again, haven't you? And could you talk to us about the importance of that for you?
Yeah, so I lost my hair when I had chemo, which didn't feel like that big of a deal at the time, to be honest. I've always been someone who does mad things with their hair or whatever, and I kind of just decided I was going to embrace it. I didn't really wear a wig. It's, you know, it's different for everyone, but that was my choice. But now, you know, it's been a few years, and I've been growing my hair back, and I had it kind of a normal color, which is not very me at all, just to try and get it growing. And I wasn't bleaching it, which is what I had before, because I knew it would be harder to grow. And then I kind of made a decision, no, I was going to bleach it because that's me and that's what I do, and, you know, feck it.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised by what an impact it had on me when I did it, because I just felt like, oh my God, I have been living on hold all of this time. I haven't been, you know, I've been like, oh, that's it, the cancer's over, but I've still been hanging on to that element of it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because I didn't have my white hair. I didn't have my hair that felt like me. I had this like cancer recovery hair. There's nothing wrong with it, but like it wasn't true to me. And, you know, when I made that external change, something clicked for me inside, and it really felt like, okay, no, I've properly moved on now. And yeah, and I feel better than ever.
Wow. And what does the future kind of hold for you now? Are you fully clear of it, or where are we?
Yeah, I was very lucky. Hodgkin's is a curable cancer, so I'm cancer-free. I have a regular checkup. I have that next week, but I can't imagine there's going to be any hiccups. I mean, unfortunately, as I learned, cancer and indeed illness in general is completely random. It can happen to you at any time. So, you know, I would never consider myself done and dusted with cancer. Like, it might never happen to me again. It could happen to me just like it could happen to anyone else.
Yeah.
But in terms of the one that I had, that's done. That's gone now.
Thank God, anyway.
And do you feel like, you know, now that you've come out the other end, I suppose, Louise, do you feel, I don't know, for the want of a better phrase, do you feel like a better person, a more knowledgeable person? Do you have a different perspective on life, or, you know, has anything changed mentally for you?
Or appreciation or something, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know if I had that, like, big, like, epiphany, like, I have to live every day to the full. Like, I still do a lot of nothing. But I'm definitely, I think, a better friend and a better kind of relative. I've always been an empathetic person, but I think I'm much more understanding now of the fact that, you know, people have different needs, and I think I'm better at supporting people now. Certainly, if I have sick friends, I'm much better at dealing with them, because I used to be like, you know, if a friend was in hospital or whatever, I'd be scared. I wouldn't think it would be appropriate for me to go and visit them or whatever. Mm. But now I know from my experience that when you're in hospital, sometimes you desperately want someone to come and visit you because you're just alone all day and you're so bored. And, you know, if you're well enough, you really, really want people to come and visit. So I know to offer always. And, you know, when I send messages, if a friend is sick, I always say, don't feel like you have to reply, because sometimes you don't have it in you to reply. And I want them to know that they don't have to worry about it. I don't want to be one extra thing to worry about. So, you know, I learned a lot from it for sure.
And just to kind of to finalize, what was kind of the role of your, how important were your family and your friends at the time you were going through all this?
Well, I am a doggedly independent person. I find it quite difficult to accept help from people. And I think this was the first time in my life where I really had to. I had to accept help. I had to take it. And that was a really good lesson for me. And my family were great. My husband was amazing. We were planning our wedding at the time. And my friends were incredibly supportive. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. A lot of people have said, oh, I bet it really showed you who your friends were and who your friends weren't. But it didn't show me that any of my friends weren't my friends. Everyone was just amazing. Everybody stepped up. And, you know, in different ways, like, people have their own way of dealing with things. And some people are comfortable with some things and some people are uncomfortable with other things. But I understand that. I think that, you know, people have to deal with things in their own way. But I wasn't disappointed by anyone.
Brilliant. Louise, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us this evening.
You're so welcome.
Especially as you have your own show to do tonight. But
did I give you the knowledge?
Do you know what? You really did. It's been so insightful.
Every time I think of you, Louise, I'm going to think of a salmon, because you've given me so much knowledge.
Do you know what? He finally got his line.
Exactly. But your book is Fat Chance, My Life in Ups and Downs and Crisp Sandwiches, and it's available in all good bookstores. I encourage everybody to go out and buy Louise's book. Louise, thank you so much again.
Thank you so much, Louise.
You.
See ya.
Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. Oh,
happens to you, don't waste your time. Here's why.
Was the fantastic Pharrell Williams and the infectious song Happy. You are tuned into Ireland's only pop-up radio station, Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services in Dublin. And this is not an intro song. This is an intro view.
Intro view?
So, do you know what? We got through all our guests pretty well, and
yes.
We did better than I thought we were going to do.
Well,
so I'm going to turn the tables now. I'm going to have you in the hot seat, Mr. Eric Lawley, who I just found out is 2 years on Fair City today.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, yeah, I see what you did there, David.
Yeah, you see that?
Yeah.
You've been with us 2 years.
Yes, on and off.
What's it been like for you?
It's been a roller coaster of emotions. No, it's been way better and much more fun than I could ever imagine it to have been. I went in there kind of not really expecting. I'll be honest, the first couple of weeks I was a little bit overawed. I was, people like to have pops of Fair City, but regardless of people's opinions, it is still the flagship show for the RTÉ drama. It's on four times a week, and it's watched by over 500,000 people. It's huge viewership in Ireland. One in eight people watch it, you know?
But I think our viewing figures are between 600,000 and 800,000.
At the moment.
Per episode.
Oh, brilliant. That's
so
pretty spectacular. And that's four times a week, David.
Four times a week.
And I kind of knew the enormity of that when I went in, so I was a little bit kind of nervous, and I know you weren't there, because I've known you since before. Me and Dave are both from Ballymun, so we brought the real Dublin edge to Carrickstown.
Yeah.
Like authentic Dublin accents. None of your D4 types around here, are they? You weren't there obviously when I went in, and you know, but I got to know Tony, I got to know Alan who plays Owen, I got to know Niamh, who plays Debbie, Amelia, who plays Katie. They were all in my first few scenes, and they were, what I was kind of blown away by was the family kind of attitude there. There is one big happy family there, and not just the actors, I'm talking like the crew, the props department, the costume department, the makeup department. There's a real sense of togetherness there, and it's a really, really fun environment to work in, and I've loved every second of it, and I hope I I hope my reign of terror continues for many years.
Well, it's not been such a reign of terror lately because I've had the good pleasure of working closely with you now over the last couple of weeks, and there'll be a lot of stuff coming up on screen with us soon. But I'm gonna completely kill him with this one. Who has been, if you had to pick one from each sex, who has been your favourite people to work with, male and female?
Wow, that is really put.
By the way, I have feelings, by the way, just so you know.
Well, I'll just say I wasn't actively listening.
I'll tell you what, I'll take myself out of this equation.
Okay, Dave.
Present company excluded. Right. Who has been kind of, I know you're not going to name just one or two, because again, there's a lot of good people in there that we work with. Who's kind of been your favourite people to work with in there so far?
Well, I've really enjoyed the scenes I've had with Carl. Carl Shields, who plays Robbie. You know, obviously Cottle and Robbie and Carl have had a big storyline over the summer where we've been at each other's throats, and culminating
with hurls also,
culminating in him.
We almost had an All Ireland final in the car park.
And it was, it's really funny. That's one of the things I always I find really funny, and it took a bit of getting used to. When I first came into the show, I had some really kind of dark, harrowing scenes with Niamh, who plays Debbie, with Alan, who plays Owen. And
Tommy.
With Tommy, of course, yeah. And I felt compelled after every scene, I'd be saying something really bad and horrible to them, and then the director say, okay, cut. And I feel compelled to go over and hug them and go, I'm sorry, I'm really sorry about that, I'm really sorry. Because I'd be in the moment going, I love these people, and I'm being horrible to them, like, you know. But that's acting for you, isn't it?
That's it. Name of the game. And it's funny, because even as well, because I'm doing it now, I'm in it 11 years this January.
Wow.
11 years this January.
That's incredible.
And I've been through kind of every kind of story that there is, and... again, I hope you're there as long as I am.
Because
I'm enjoying working with you. I know people are enjoying watching you.
Mm.
Long may it continue.
What's been your favourite story that you've been involved in?
That is an easy one. That was the Bishop story with Paddy Bishop when he came back, and Andrew Connolly was just
superb.
Absolute phenomenal to work with, and then put with Helen Norton and the lads and Martha as well. We did it the justice that it deserved.
Oh, it was great television. Great television.
Loved it.
Yeah.
We loved it. Right, but I think we have to leave it there now.
Do we? We have to go.
By the way, also just everybody, reminder, 8 o'clock RT1. I'm just throwing that out there.
But no, seriously, you should be listening to Walk in My Shoes FM, because next up you have Pat O'Matney and Pamela Flood. And I'd like to thank Dan on the desk and researcher Priscilla, Adam, Nathan, and Amy. Keep listening. Walk in My Shoes Radio is on air every day. This is World Mental Health Awareness Week from 7 a.m. until 9 p.m. encouraging you to get the conversation started.
I've been Dave O'Sullivan.
And I've been Eric Lawler.
And we want to thank you very much for listening. Have a good evening.
be. If I had your word, I would give it away just to see the girls and play. Yeah, when I am king, surely I would need a queen and a palace.
Got to start talking about mental health. It can get better. Log on to walkinmyshoes.ie to find out more.
Come and move that in my direction. So thankful for that, it's such a blessing, yeah. Turn every situation into heaven, yeah. Oh, you are my sunrise on the darkest day. Got me feeling some kind of way. Make me wanna savor every moment. Slowly, slowly. You fit me, tailor made, love how you put it on. Got the only key, know how to turn it on. The way you never lie, my ear, the only words I wanna hear. Baby, take it slow so we can last long.
Tú eres el imán y yo soy el metal. Me voy acercando y voy armando el plan. Solo con pensarlo se acelera el pulso.
Oh yeah. Ya, ya me está gustando más de lo normal. Todos mis sentidos van pidiendo más. Esto hay que tomarlo sin ningún apuro.
Despacito. Quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído. Si no estás conmigo, despacito. Quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firmo las paredes de tu laberinto. Y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito.
Pido un beso, vendado.